WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
The founders of the band Steely Dan, Donald Fagen and Walter Becker, have released their first album of all new Steely Dan material since 1979. The CD is called Two Against Nature. On this archive edition, we have an interview with Fagen, the pianist and lead singer of Steely Dan. Fagen co-writes Steely Dan songs with guitarist Walter Becker. Their hits include Ricky Don't Lose That Number, Reeling in the Years, Peg, and FM. In the 70s, the band rarely toured, and Fagen and Becker seldom gave interviews. They went their separate ways in 1981 and reunited in the 90s for a series of summer concerts. The reunited Steely Dan will be the subject of a PBS special in March and an edition of the VH1 program Storytellers on April 24th. Before we hear from Fagen, let's hear a track from the new CD. This is called Janie Runaway. Music from Steely Dan's new CD, Two Against Nature. I spoke with the band's co-founder, Donald Fagen, in 1991. What kind of music did you grow up listening to growing up in, I think it was Passaic, New Jersey?
My mother was a dance band singer. She started at 5 years old and doing shows up in the Catskills. She was kind of a local Borscht Belt child star. And she worked every summer until she was 17. So she knew, you know, every possible standard, and she had a very nice kind of back phrasing, swing type phrasing style. And she used to sing around the house, you know, during my childhood. So I knew all the basic standards. And then when I was about 8 or 9 years old, quite young, I had some older cousins who turned me on to jazz, and I was kind of a weenie jazz fan. I collected jazz and became, you know, very, very involved with not only the music, but the cultural realities of jazz and how it differed from my middle-class background. I think, like a lot of white middle-class kids, black music was... and its culture was an alternative. Like a lot of kids, I found something missing in the American childhood. And jazz was, in a way, saved me.
So how old were you when you were able to go into the city to jazz clubs?
Well, my cousins who were in high school used to take me in to the city when I was 10 or 11 years old. I remember sitting in the kiddie section of the Vanguard.
They had a kiddie section?
Well, they said we'll put you in the kiddie section. What it actually was banquettes along the wall, right next to where they used to have the drum kit. And I remember at 11 years old, sitting right next to Danny Richmond, who was playing with Charlie Mingus, and having my glass of Coca-Cola vibrate towards the edge of the table from the power of his drumming, and have to keep moving my glass back towards the middle of the table.
So how did you discover or rediscover rock and soul and rhythm and blues?
Well, I think in the mid-60s, 65, which is the year I went to college up at Bard College in Annandale, New York, jazz had changed quite a bit, or was in the process of changing into a more, really a more political music because of the what was going on in the country culturally as far as black and white. And at the same time, I felt that I couldn't relate to the music as well as I had done. And at the same time, I discovered blues and soul music, which had, I think, had also had a lot of the political feeling and, in fact, political relevance about them. But I could relate to it more easily. And it had a kind of directness, which I was looking for at that time. And, you know, it was unfamiliar music to me. But it had a lot of the kind of soul that I had always heard in jazz, and it just attracted me. And I also liked a lot of the you know, white rock bands that were around at the time.
Now, before you and Walter Becker formed Steely Dan, you were part of the backup group for Jay and the Americans, whose hits included Only in America, She Cried, Come a Little Bit Closer, Cara Mia. Now, you toured with them in 70 and 71. They had their last record on the chart in 1970, so this was the decline period for Jay and the Americans. I mean, let's face it, you know, psychedelic music was in, Jay and the Americans was out at that time. So what was it like to tour with a band that had a lot of hits but was on the way down?
Yeah, they were on a declining curve, no doubt. And but for us, it was great because it was a job playing music with a professional group, and it was our really I think that was our earliest experience of doing real touring, and we got a lot of experience as you know, with how to keep a rhythm section tight, how to play together, and. We had a lot of fun in that group because we didn't have any responsibility. There were four guys in monkey suits standing in front of us, and it made it very very easy and fun.
Did you like the band's music?
Well, you know, it wasn't really our cup of tea, but you know, if you play music, any kind of music, if it has a good groove, it's fun to play. It really doesn't matter what it is.
You went out to Los Angeles with Walter Becker to become staff writers for ABC Records.
Right.
Describe what the job was like as a staff writer.
Staff writing was a great job. We were probably among the very last staff writers ever hired by a record company, which was definitely the idea of having staff writers was on its way out. But we had a little room with a piano in it, and every day we'd come in at 9 o'clock to the our little studio and try to write pop songs for the artists on the label, and it was fun. Unfortunately, Walter and I are probably among the worst pop song writers ever. our songs tended to be imitative of other pop songs, and you know, we were basically writing on order for groups like the Grassroots, for. There was a few other groups we tried to write for who were on the label, like it's Three Dog Night, but none of them ever actually recorded any of our songs. I think Denny Daugherty, formerly with the Mamas and Papas, did one, but I don't think it was ever released.
Were you writing lyrics as cryptic for the Grassroots as you later wrote for your own group?
Well, we tried to, you know, that was another problem. We tried to write lyrics that, were less personal and you know, more universal and more romantic. But generally, that was another element that was made them sort of easy to resist by the by the commercial pop singers.
We're listening to a 1991 interview with Donald Fagen, co-founder of the band Steely Dan. Let's listen to one of their hits from the 70s. This is Bodhisattva. Whose idea was naming the band Steely Dan? Had you read a lot of William Burroughs fiction?
Yeah, Walter and I were both Burroughs fans, and we needed a name in a hurry. And this was about 1971. We'd already started recording an album, and we thought that this was kind of a funny in-joke to call it Steely Dan, which is a sexual device, which is mentioned in... kind of cartoon sexual device, which is mentioned in Naked Lunch by William Burroughs. And, of course, we thought that this band would last about 6 months and that we'd, then go on to something else. I think probably if we had thought about it, we would have come up with something more original.
Well, did you ever feel, once everybody found out what Steely Dan meant, did you ever feel stuck with a name that you didn't want anymore?
In a way, but, you know, it kind of... by that time, it sort of meant something else, so...
Right, it meant the band.
Yeah, so, apologies to William Burroughs.
Why did Steely Dan become more of a studio band than a touring band, especially given that you and Walter Becker had, you know, gotten your start playing as the backup band for Jay and the Americans, so you had experience being on the road, playing very different music, but being on the road.
Mm-hmm. Well, the band was put together very quickly, the same way the title, the name of the band was chosen. We basically started recording with a five-man group that were recruited mostly from studio players that we had played with in the East Coast. And for years, we'd been looking for a singer that could be a front man and... who had what we at the time thought of as a true singing voice, and we'd never been able to find one. At the last moment, we brought in a guy named Dave Palmer, who one of the other guys knew, and we started recording the record with him singing, but everyone seemed to agree that the attitude we were trying to express was really lost. It was something very personal, so I was elected as being able to, sing the most in tune, and between Walter and I my pitch was a little better, and I had the right attitude, so I became the front man. And in fact, first record, professional record I ever recorded was "Do It Again," which became a big hit.
You think of the singer as being the front man?
Certainly on stage. There was no one else willing to do it, really. So by default, I became the singer and the front man.
Were you uncomfortable with this new position?
Well, yes and no. I didn't like the pressure. I had an untrained voice, and my voice would get tired by the end of a night of singing for like an hour and a half and in front of a big, noisy rock and roll band. And I enjoyed performing and I enjoyed playing, but the singing and especially talking to the audience was new to me, and it was it was difficult for me. I'm basically was a shy kid, and it was a little hard for me, hard going for me.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Nice talking to you.
Donald Fagen co-founded the band Steely Dan. Steely Dan has its first recording of all new material since 1979. It's called Two Against Nature. Our interview with Fagen was recorded in 1991. Coming up, a review of the film Wonder Boys. This is Fresh Air.